Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ayla's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
Pretty simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Good day, everybody. I hope you got your umbrellas ready as the rain has come into the area once again, but cooling things down, and that's okay. So we can use a lot of all of the cooling down that you can get. How are you? Welcome aboard Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you from high atop Rock House number one from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along as always, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, or 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, the voice of the region, and on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked right where you got it. You don't need to go anywhere else. If you happen to be following along on social media as well, just, you know, all the stuff. Hit the like button and the subscribe and da-da-da-da, yada-yada-yada. But appreciate you no matter where, again, and how. Guys are on from all over, and we appreciate that. Looking forward, Mike DeCourcy on with us as always today. But Joe Tipton joining us from On Three. Joe is the king of breaking these basketball stories, and you can be a part of that at thehoosier.com. As a matter of fact, please go get a subscription to thehoosier.com. Help support those guys. It's you can get that for $1 right now for the first month and 50% off of the first year. But thehoosier.com On Three is that's the new place to find your information, man. Joe Tipton doing an outstanding job breaking news, was once again the first with the latest commitment for Indiana. And he is on top of all of that and more, in addition to the Hoosier.com writers like Alec Lasley and Kyler Staley and Zach Browning and all those guys. So be good if you could help them out, support the guys. The WNBA looking to expand, and so is the NHL. One of them has to do with Indianapolis and one does not. Indianapolis already has a WNBA team, but they're looking at going into Cleveland on the 2028 season, Detroit 2029, and Philadelphia on 2030, which would give them a smooth 18 teams matching the Big Ten. So, and then also I saw that future IU basketball opponents, both Nebraska and Kansas State, will both be playing in the National Association of Basketball Coaches 2025 Hall of Fame Classic in Kansas City, Nebraska taking on New Mexico, and Kansas State taking on Memphis State. That's in November. So a lot of November games, man. On November 20th, then the winners and losers will play each other. Winners play the winners for the championship, yada, yada, on 11-21. So we'll talk to Joe about that a little bit, but mainly we're going to talk about Indiana's, their recruiting, how that's going, how it looks across the entire Big Ten, Purdue, They're looking strong again as well. EA Sports announced the return of the college basketball video game for you video heads. I know there's plenty of you out there that that used to enjoy that. So you've got it back. So there you go. But looking forward to talking to Joe about all of this as Indiana deep into recruiting right now. You've got the DMV live session 3 going on. You can catch up with all of that. That is some executive content, premium content, but all kinds of talk about players that Indiana has an interest in. In addition to that, D'Angelo Pons has been tabbed as the 2026 NFL first round draft pick by the NFL. You know, I've talked about how Indiana football, all the great things they're doing, that they've got to start getting draft picks. And here you go. And no surprise here. And he won't be he may be the only one in the first round, but he won't be the only guy to go. But D'Angelo, man, he's a pro. Breakthrough season last in 2024, and look for the same success this year. And so you're going to see these guys with more opportunity, more eyes on them. They didn't get the eyes on them at first because nobody really thought or expected or believed that was going on. But when Indiana's defense kept being listed as one of the tops in the country, game after game after game after game, made a difference. And so guys like D'Angelo Pons and Aiden Fisher and Kamala, it's going to be a big time fun again this year. And who's the breakout player this year? Who is going to break out in football and basketball? Now, Tucker DeVries is kind of, you know, we already expect that of him on the basketball side, but who else is going to be a breakout star in basketball? Well, there's this is not for this year, but Marcus Ponder landed an offer from Indiana. He is a 7-foot center. So if you think that they won't be using a big man, you're not exactly right. He is a Gillian Academy 4-star center. Landed an offer from IU basketball, number 67 overall player in the On3 industry rankings, number 7 center in the class. He looks like a beast. 7-foot, 300-pound physical center who's been dominant in the DMV live session this month. He averaged over 15 points, 10 boards, and just 1.5 blocks. Shot 80% from the floor. 6 double-doubles across 2 weekends. Kenny Johnson, checking him out. Seeing what the games are like. 15 points, 12 rebounds in one game, 2 blocks, 13 and 7, 21 and 18 in game 3. That's a pretty good game. And then 13 and 14. So pretty good. Other than game 2 is the only one he did not have a double-double in. So Auburn, Arizona State, Miami, Kansas, the usual suspects. Rutgers, Georgia, Georgetown, Florida State, Memphis, Maryland, Tennessee, and others are involved in this recruitment. Purdue, Cincinnati, Northwestern, some of the new programs. Man, how much is Georgetown missing Kenny Johnson? I'm here to tell you. Boy, they are definitely missing Kenny Johnson. But yeah, you know what that means? Cabro throwing out some congrats to Rick Bozich on his retirement. That means you're going to have to take his spot, Cabro, on Wednesdays. Going to start getting you in here. So start fitting that into your schedule there, Big Daddy. Hope Cabro is doing well, enjoying some Florida weather, which I'm hopefully Thanks to Rick on his last day. Yeah. Big shout out to Rick. I don't know if we get to have him this week. That may not be the case. So, yeah, congratulations to our friend Rick Bozich. I am going to miss him without question. Justin says, just wait, folks. The IU football season will be another very special season. Yeah, I think that that's going to be the case. I've long said that. I haven't gone into all the specifics of what I think. I'll wait till we get closer to that. And I thank everybody for the comments on here. Gabriel says, crazy to think it was 5 years ago we drove up together to watch the Kaufman Wren and Logan Duncombe. Yeah, Trey Kaufman Wren and Logan Duncombe. Yeah, it's crazy. It is. Time flies, brother. Time flies. No, yep, up in Noblesville. I remember it well. That AAU season kicking off, too. Those guys will be going. Justin said, just give Rick a few weeks off. Let him enjoy some time. Well, of course. He's the boss. He gets to call it. He gets to make it. Ryan says, trainer Dwayne Lucas passed away last night. Oh, really? Wow, I had not seen that. Holy smokes. Well, Rick will be working on that story. Well, I guess not, since his last day has come. But, wow, that very fitting. Not fitting, that's not the right word. But Rick had a long time working relationship with Dwayne Lucas for covering, because of covering the Derby for so long. But holy cow, one of the most decorated trainers in the history of the game, was around forever. Was a friend of Bob, former IU coach Bob Knight. They were good friends. One of the people in, I'm sure Eric Crawford's tribute article was great. Now, I don't know if you're talking about for Rick or for Dwayne Lucas, but we'll see. Is Joe Tipton related to John Tipton, who, no. I highly doubt it. Boy, we're getting some history lessons here today. No, that's a little bit far back. But we shall find out. Hey, we've got to take a break. We've got lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Mike DeCourcy joins us next. We're back with all of that and more from Rack House Number 1. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday, and that means a visit from our good friend Mike DeCourcy. How are you, sir?
I am well, Jim. How are you this morning?
I cannot complain. The temperature's down a little bit, so that always makes things a little nicer. As a matter of fact, looking and seeing those 70s where the rain has brought in a little relief, so I'll take it, man. It's just been the humidity and the heat. It's been overwhelming.
Yeah, we didn't have much of a spring, I'll tell you that. But the Pacers sort of made up for it, so I think we're square. I don't think we can complain.
Yeah, and we kind of got hung up in that and, you know, took our focus away. So we didn't really give a hoot if that we didn't, because we were having a lot of fun. And maybe more fun to be had, as I saw in the Indy Star this morning, that the Indianapolis is on a list for NHL expansion, potentially. But it's complicated, it says. So that's when it says that in the headline, that's never good.
I saw a poll. I can't remember who did it. Someone did a Twitter poll. I think it was Jake Query from Indy did a poll, a good friend. And it was, if you could have MLS expansion or NHL expansion, you could get one of the two teams, which would you take?
And I'm very interested to hear the answer to this.
When I voted, which I voted for MLS, I think that at that point, I think that it was around 77-23, something like that, which surprised
me. Soccer to hockey?
No, hockey to soccer. Hockey was winning. They were using the sticks and clubbing the soccer people into submission.
Wow.
Significantly toward the NHL. Now, the complication of that is that you're already in the process of building a soccer stadium that would be MLS worthy. Or at least that when I left town, they were saying they were going to. I don't know if they've shoveled any dirt or yet.
Well, yeah, I don't think that they're going to do it unless they get a commitment from Major League MLS.
Okay. Well, they at that point, but see, Gainbridge is not built for hockey. It's built for basketball, as it should be, and that's one of the reasons it's fabulous, is that it's built for basketball. I think they would have to build a separate building. Either that, or they would have to kind of damage what makes Gainbridge one of the best basketball arena, one of the maybe the best modern basketball arena that there is. If you changed it to fit hockey, I think you would damage what makes it special for basketball. And honestly, I'm not an engineer or an architect, so I don't even know if it's possible. But you'd have to build a separate building for that, and I'm not sure that the area really needs that. It would be so. I think that a soccer arena would serve it better, but I guess we'll see. I kind of wonder with you know where the NHL would go with expansion. It doesn't seem like they're in need of more teams. I think they have 32 now. And the NBA actually still has 30. So I don't know why hockey would need more teams when you've already got 32. It seems like they're kind of at the saturation point.
Does how big of a stadium the average NHL stadium?
20-ish.
Okay. So it's typical NBA arena size, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the one here in Pittsburgh holds 18 and change. So it can be, I don't think you can go much below that and have the NHL be happy. You probably can't go much above 20 and feel like you're giving everybody a decent seat. So it's in that range.
I'm surprised that by that number, because soccer has a head start in Indianapolis and a successful team in the Indy 11. But the aspirations for NHL seem like that was a little further along, even though I don't know if there is the support there. I'm sure there is, I guess. But I can't imagine you would do both of these, not in Indianapolis. I'm not sure Indianapolis is big enough
right, to
get an NHL and an MLS team, especially within close proximity of each other.
I think the other reason why soccer makes more sense to me, Jim, is that you've got an NBA team which plays the same schedule, give or take a day. They are on that September to June window. You play that. That's the NBA season in terms of training camp, exhibitions, regular season playoffs, and that's the way it goes for NHL too. So you would be duplicating that, whereas the MLS schedule comes into Indy in a time when there is essentially nothing. I mean, it's the end of high school basketball season and college basketball season. And then they play into the fall, which of course would duplicate a little bit of the Colts and high school and college football. But it's a much more, the months from accepting an NBA playoff run, the months from April to September are much more open for a soccer schedule than they would be in the winter, when you would be Pacers on top of Icers or whatever they would call themselves. So I'm not sure that logistically it makes as much sense for an NHL team. And the other thing you have to remember about NHL, Jim, is that you mentioned before you were surprised by the size of the arenas. One of the reasons why you have to have an 18 to 20,000 seat arena for hockey is that they are much more dependent on gate than any other major American sport other than soccer. I mean, because they're getting TV money, and it's not insignificant, but it's not what the NBA gets. It's not what MLB or NFL gets. And they're still paying their athletes a lot. And so it comes down to the idea of paying those athletes from the gate.
Yeah, Rudy is putting up some stats for us from in regards to GameBridge showing it's, you know, I thought it was set up more. It's 17,002 for basketball. I thought it held closer to 20, but
maybe that's 17,224. Oh, no, it says for NBA. Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was more than that, but hey.
He is saying that if you put hockey in there, it can only accommodate 12,000 fans, and that's not an NHL arena. You can't run an NHL team on 12,000 fans unless you're charging $400 a ticket. I mean,
you could go out. They have the Coliseum out in the east end of town, which an oldie but a goodie, the home of the NBA, the home of. Oh my God, this is a great story. Now, I won't get us off track, but I was a sports information director for the bull riding portion of the professional rodeo cowboys circuit several eons ago. And they were having an event there, and one of the damn bulls, I don't know how, but ended up on the concourse. Dude, yeah, it's one of the craziest stories ever. He took one in one of those big boom cameras that they have to go out there. He took that thing down. I've never seen anything like it, but the history that's in that place is awesome, and it's about that size. But you're not going to put a brand new franchise of any sort in anything other than a crisp new facility, because that's part of what draws the people, and you've got to have the suites and the seats and all right. of that good stuff. A lot of talk of it. This one kind of just came out of nowhere because the soccer had been kind of bouncing around, but not really. As someone said earlier, that plan has been put on hold. I think that until they get a commitment, they're not going to, but you know, growing up in Southern Indiana, Louisville has had both as well. They have had minor league hockey and minor league soccer. And right now that minor league soccer team they have uber successful. They've won multiple championships in the league that they're in, which is the same league as the Indy 11.
Right.
And the support, man, I remember, you know, 10 years ago when took my daughter there when she was playing soccer as a kid. And that's, I think I've mentioned it before. That was my first introduction to, wait a minute, timeout. You know, she wasn't paying attention for crap. Her and her friends, they didn't give tubes, cotton candy and all that stuff. That's all that mattered. But I was actually enthralled by this game that I was watching because these guys were just busting ass. And I'm like, I've watched soccer before, but I had never seen this. These right. guys going full tilt from one end to the other, back, hosing down the field all the time. What's the deal with hosing down the field?
They were doing it during the game?
Yeah, during the match, they would come out, and maybe it had something to do with that particular field. Although
it might have, yeah. I mean, I've seen games where at halftime they'll water the field, but never seen it during a game. That's totally new. That might have had something to do with heat or something. I've never seen that in any game I've been to.
But anyway, that was my first introduction to wow, because it was there wasn't the flopping. You know, at that time, you know, 10 years ago, my experience was watching World Cup. And 10 years ago, when everyone else was watching World Cup, or 12 years ago, whenever it was crap. Oh, my God, the flopping. I wanted to start punching guys. The flopping was so ridiculous. And I think that gave a bad taste to a lot of people, myself included, because I'm like, oh, this is crap. It's a crap sport. It's like I thought growing up. Until I realized it wasn't. And then along with learning some rules helps a lot.
Right.
To understand the damn game helps a lot. And then starting to cover IU again several years ago. I love watching IU soccer. love going to watch those games, those matches. They're fun. Those college level, higher level, they're fun as heck. And now that I know, Kylie never did. Real, she played right up through on a state championship qualifying team. Still, never watched the game, and I never understood. I'm like, I'm watching the damn game now, but you're not. But I found it very funny. But my whole roundabout point of that is going back to when Louisville had the River Frogs in as their hockey team. But man, people showed up. They came out. There's a market for it. So it's kind of crazy. But we just saw the winner of the Stanley Cup come from Florida again. Right. It wasn't long ago we saw them in Las Vegas in their first year. I'll never get over that. How the hell does an expansion team win anything? Crazy. But it also goes to show, I think, it's Indianapolis. Indianapolis is without question the best sports city in the United States, which makes it one, if not the best in the world, because of all the things it has, host, is able to do, how well they do it. It's just the perfect size market, I think, for these teams to matter, for everything to matter. You get to LA, UCLA, you know, half the time nobody like, what? Who are they? But no, everything is known in a market size Indianapolis. It's big enough where everybody knows. I think it makes a huge difference.
Oh, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, I long before I moved to Indianapolis, which was in 2014, I had written and had campaigned that every Final Four should be in Indianapolis. I get people, oh, well, yeah, but take one. No, there's nowhere else that does it as well as Indianapolis. It's not close. New Orleans, San Antonio, I hope I'm not hurting anybody's feelings, but it's not even close. It should be nowhere else. You take it to Arizona, and my buddy Doug Tamaro from Arizona State, who's as good an SID as there is, does an amazing job with the media, but you're out in the middle of nowhere. Not that Phoenix is the middle of nowhere. Phoenix is Phoenix, but you're not in Phoenix. You're 20 miles from Phoenix in Glendale. So it's not good enough. When they take it to Dallas, Dallas-Fort Worth, I really like it. I think Dallas is an underrated city. I've had some really nice weeks and weekends there. But the Final Four isn't in Dallas. It's in Irving or wherever the heck that Cowboys Stadium is, which is 20 miles away from Dallas.
It's Jerry not, World.
It's not. I mean, those places are just stadiums, and then then the Final Four kind of becomes just the basketball, which, hey, is amazing. But why not get the basketball and everything else that you get at an Indianapolis Final Four, which is all the interaction with between fans and coaches and media people and all the rest of that happens because it's all downtown. I can't wait for 2026 for April of next year, Jim, because the Final Four in Indy is the best there is by laps. Speaking of laps, I saw the F1 movie with
oh, really? Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, and it's wonderful. And I'm telling you, the Indy Final Four is laps ahead of every other Final Four site. It's not even competitive.
I love Brad Pitt has become one of my favorite actors. As a matter of fact, I just watched another one of my old favorites last night, Snatch. Have you heard of that movie?
Yes, the Guy Ritchie movie. Yeah.
Yes. It has so much. It's like you need a scorecard, and I know what's going on because I've seen it, and I love it. But I stopped the credits last night at one point, just the names of the characters, and I wish I had them in front of me. But Bricktop. Turkish, Frankie Four Fingers. There was, when I stopped it at one point, every one for like nine in a row had this great name. And I'm like, look at the names of these guys. I mean, it's awesome. And then the actors that are in it, Brad Pitt is amazing. You can't understand a damn word he says. But it's caravan. Only thing I understand is when he said a caravan for his mom. If you haven't seen this movie, I'm telling you, it's been around for 20 years, but
yes,
hilarious. And Brad Pitt is like, and Dennis Farina, the only Americans, I guess, it really in it, but it's hilarious. It's about a heist that has to do with the diamond and all kinds of illegal booking. He's a gypsy. They're part of these gypsies and you can't understand what the hell they're saying. But yeah, what a great movie. But he has become one of my favorite actors. He just, I just watched again, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah,
a Quentin Tarantino film with another great cast. But he's just so, he is really one of the top actors in the world.
Well, it's interesting. The premise of F1 is he comes back, he's a driver, he comes back to Formula One. And my initial thought when I saw the premise was, look, Brad Pitt looks way better than I do for 60. I'm a little bit older than 60, but he looks way better than I do, but he's still 60. So how do you present that as a premise? And they cover that in the first 3 minutes, just about. It's really clever the way they do it. The entire presentation really does make you feel like you're inside a Formula One team with the whole traveling operation that F1 has. I think for an Indianapolis audience, an Indiana audience that has so much love for IndyCar and the Indy 500. Look, I know that F1 is kind of a rival, but it's a great movie in terms of immersing you in that world, in the experience of the, you know, being on the track, the camera work and the production of the racing scenes is phenomenal. I would recommend, if you're interested, seeing it in a theater. I believe it's an IMAX, and some people that I know have seen an IMAX. We just saw it on a standard, right? With the sound and the reclining. Standard is a lot better now than it was in 1975. But the standard scene of watching that film in a theater is really phenomenal. So I would recommend, if anybody's half interested in seeing it, that it's better there than it will be when it gets to streaming.
No doubt. And before we go to break, I want to salute a great, great friend, Rick Bozich. He's been on with me for years. I've known him I grew up reading Rick. I'd rather say this now when he's not on. I grew up reading him when in high school. I was a fiend for reading the newspaper. I mean, every day, especially, of course, the sports section. And he was the sports columnist at the Courier Journal and Louisville Times back in the late 70s, I guess, is when he got there as a youngster. But because it's not that he's that old, he started doing great things early and wound up in Louisville and never left, which Louisville, the Southern Indiana, that entire metro area, so, so fortunate because very, very, very few communities get a place. Louisville's the home to Rick Bozich, to Eric Crawford, who is his running mate, who is just right up there. Pat Forty lives in Louisville as well. So three of our nation's preeminent sports writers, and there's been others before them. Billy Reed. It's amazing when you get
Dave Kindred came through Louisville too.
Dave Kindred, I forgot about. Yes, Dave Kindred when I was a kid as well. So
did you mention Pat? Did you mention Pat Forty?
Oh yeah, yeah. He because he still lives there.
Yeah, he still lives there. He's a phenomenal journalist.
I remember when he. I was not in high school. I was out of high school and in college. But I remember when he first came to the Courier, he was covering Southern Indiana basketball.
And he came over to interview Joe Hinton, who was the Floyd Central basketball coach, who is, if you could put, if you knew Joe Hinton and you could compare him, you would understand why Pat Graham had no problem playing for Bob Knight. This was just a, this was a lateral step for Pat Graham. And he will tell you that. But the funny thing, the difference between Bob Knight and Joe Hinton is off the floor, Joe Hinton was just one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Just normal. Put him on that damn basketball floor and he would become a maniac sometimes. I mean, greatest, my favorite. I was not there. I wish I had been. This was in a historic, the Danchon Fieldhouse in Jeffersonville. Floyd Central was playing Providence, just an old rivalry down there. And Joe got, how many technicals does he get? Are you allowed before you're booted?
Only two. Now, maybe it was more then. I don't know.
No, it was two. But he got that, a third one and a fourth one and a fifth one for good measure. Five technical fouls, baby. Oh, yeah. I'm like, that is just, I love telling those stories just because he was such, the duality of his personality was nuts because just a great, he was my driver's ed teacher. He would go to sleep while you were driving. Was known for that. But one of the great, 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 great people. We've got to take a break. The great Mike DeCourcy is with me. We'll come back. And unfortunately, we'll talk about one of his former great Pirates. Dave Parker has passed away. In addition to Dwayne Lucas, as sports loses a couple of titans. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. Very glad to have you along. Appreciate you being with us no matter where and how you're listening. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox, and Big Ten Networks with us. And a long time. Are you from Pittsburgh originally?
Yes, born in Pittsburgh, raised in the suburbs. I've lived very, very, very briefly, actually, in Pittsburgh. A few months during college, a few months while we were living in my wife's parents' house while we were having a house built. So only about 6 months of actual living in the city. No, actually, about 9 months of actual living in the city. But I've been a part of the. I lived in the suburbs, and Pittsburgh's different than a lot of places in that sense, Jim. In that, like, if you grew up in the suburbs, you basically say you grew up in Pittsburgh. Whereas, like, when I lived in Memphis and Cincinnati, they were very specific about where they grew up. You grew up in Anderson, you didn't grow up in Cincinnati. If you grew up in Middletown, you didn't grow up in Cincinnati. Very different from Pittsburgh, where if you grew up in Aliquippa, you may tell other people from Pittsburgh that you grew up in Aliquippa, but if you saw somebody in New York and they said, where are you from? You'd say you're from Pittsburgh because everybody here kind of considers themselves Pittsburghers.
Yeah. A lot of people, we had that going on growing up in Southern Indiana as well. It's like, no, you're from that side of 65, man. That's a difference. Or the difference from Louisville, just crossing the bridge to New Albany, unbelievable. As far as, it's like almost two different worlds of sorts. Crazy. But yeah, getting back to Pittsburgh, I had a roommate in college, Tom Avampato. He's still there someplace. I forget what area he was actually from. But anyway, I remember growing up, man, those great Pittsburgh Pirate teams, we are family. When was that? 79?
It was 1979, yes.
Oh, man. Look at me. All right. Yeah, the Pirates, man. Big Pop, Dave Parker. Matter of fact, because he played for the Reds later. I forgot.
Oh, he did. Yes. Yes.
The throw. He had the throw. Was that the All-Star game he did that or a World Series?
Yeah. I think it was the 78 All-Star game. He was still a Pirate. I think it was 78. Could have been 79, right around there.
God, I can still – I remember very little in my life, Mike DeCourcy, but I can see that throw in my mind. I mean, he uncorked a freaking frozen rope that came out of a heat-seeking missile – that never dropped below 4 feet until it got to the catcher's mitt. Whop! Out! Yes. I forget who we got out, but for those of you that don't know what I'm going nuts about, in the All-Star game in 79, Dave Parker, I can't remember if it was a pop fly or a hit to right field, but it's a pop fly because I think the guy was tagging up maybe. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Whatever it is. You can find, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube.
It's worth looking up because it's one of the best throws ever. I mean, and in an All-Star game, when stuff like that happens in an All-Star game, of course, it's elevated. Maybe it makes it out to be, in my mind, more than it was. I don't know, but it was pretty damn cool. And those were some great teams. And that was back when Cincinnati and Pittsburgh could win a World Series.
Yes. Dave was phenomenal in that late 70s run. I actually covered the Pirates in 1982, which was not a great year for Dave. He was hurt a lot of the year, only played in 73 games that season, hit 270. That was not vintage Dave Parker. And when he got to the Reds and he played 4 years for the Reds, which Cincinnati is his hometown, that sort of revitalized his career, and he made a couple of All-Star games there, drove in 125 runs 1 year with the Reds. Later on, made an All-Star game at a pretty advanced age when he was playing in Milwaukee. It's so very nice to see that he finally got his Hall of Fame due. It's tragic that he didn't get the weekend that every Hall of Famer gets, or most every Hall of Famer gets, to go up to Cooperstown to go through the induction ceremony and all of that. He died a month short of that, but it's certainly better that he died knowing he's a Hall of Famer than it is. I've written about this on a couple of occasions when Dennis Johnson, first the great Celtic and Sonic. When he was first on the Hall of Fame ballot for the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, it was in the mid-90s, and I was a voter because I was president of the basketball writers. I got to vote 2 years in a row, and he was on the ballot. And I'm like, of course Dennis Johnson's a Hall of Famer. Of course he is. He's the best, one of the best defensive players in the history of the game. Check. And he didn't make it. And then he passed away from a sudden heart attack, I don't know, 5, 6, 8 years later after that, and then they put him in. That's such an awful thing. We have to be better. And Bill Nunn, the Steelers scout who revolutionized NFL scouting by bringing the black colleges in and brought Mel Blunt to Pittsburgh and John Stallworth to Pittsburgh. And he got into the Hall of Fame in around 2021, Jim. And it was so late that even his son, the actor Bill Nunn, who you might remember from Sister Act, who was the co-star of Sister Act and Do the Right Thing, even he had already passed by the time his father got into the Hall of Fame. And, of course, Bill Nunn Sr. was gone, too. We can do better. The Hall of Fames have to stop this nonsense where they, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, and then all of a sudden you're good enough. Well, you were always good enough. Dave Parker was a Hall of Famer 20 years ago and should have been in 20 years ago, not a month after he passes away. They're making the same mistake now with, and this is different, but they're making the same mistake now with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. And I know those guys are not the easiest people ever to deal with, but there's no doubt they're among the greatest players of all time. And I have friends and they cheated. Well, okay, so did a lot of people who were already in years ago, and some possibly who played were as contemporaries with them. We can't know who did it and who didn't because they weren't testing. So I don't believe that you should single out those two or those two in particular for exclusion because of things that were reported about them when the commissioner who didn't stop any of it from happening is in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I'm not saying it's his fault, but he didn't stop it. And he's in there. And yet those two guys who are clearly among the greatest players in the history of the game are not. It's the gatekeeping that's done with the Hall of Fame. Yeah, you want to keep out players who aren't good enough. That's your job. Keep out players who aren't good enough. And Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are both good enough.
Well, quickly looking over at Dave Parker's capsule synopsis quickly leads you to wonder what the hell were they waiting on?
Somewhat similar. MVP,
two times World Series champion, a decade apart, back-to-back National League batting championships, 3 Gold Glove, 3 Silver Slugger Awards, 7-time All-Star, the 1979 All-Star Game MVP Award, and Major League Baseball's first home run derby title. And he tacked up all over 2,700 hits, a .290 batting average, almost 339 home runs, and almost 1,500 RBIs. What the hell? I'm like, well, okay.
Somewhat similar in a different vein to what is going on with Bonds and Clemens. He was brought up in the 80s. There were these trials that were in Pittsburgh, and his name was brought up within the trials, and that was a problem for his reputation. And I can't say for sure because there's 400 voters or whatever there are. I can't say that every one of them had that in mind and not voting for him as a Hall of Famer. But he was not voted for he cycled off the ballot. By the Baseball Writers Association of America. He was on for 15 years, and I believe he never even got 30% of the vote, Jim, which is preposterous. But that's what happens sometimes with that Hall of Fame voting, is that they use off the field stuff to justify not honoring the athletes that have earned that. I mean, we're not talking about, we're not talking about guys who committed serious crimes or anything. I mean, that's not what I'm talking about. If there's anybody out there who did those things, then no, I don't think they belong in a Hall of Fame. But that wasn't Dave. It wasn't Barry Bonds, and it wasn't Roger Clemens. None of those guys were in that circumstance, but they still were kept out. Dave until the very end, which again, I'm glad that he knew when he passed away that he was a Hall of Famer, because he definitely deserved that. But it should have been many years ago.
Absolutely. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all of his great content there. Mike, I can't thank you enough as always, brother. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too, Jim. And we were speaking of soccer before, the Gold Cup semifinals tomorrow night. So I'll be covering that, writing off that. And I did a piece this past weekend off the quarterfinal about the great performance by the goalkeeper, Matt Fries, which in the shootout, the best shootout performance any U.S. soccer goalie has delivered. And the best I can remember. I mean, He got his hand on, there were 6 penalty kicks taken. He got his hand on or stopped 5 of them. I've never seen that before. I'm not saying it never happened before. I'm saying I never saw it. It was phenomenal. So I wrote about that, and we'll look forward to tomorrow night seeing how they do against Guatemala, I believe, is the opponent.
That sounds great. Mike DeCourcy, thank you, brother. Appreciate you as always.
Take care, Jim.
We've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Looking forward to talking to Joe Tipton in the next segment. Of course, Joe is from On3. where you can find all of his great basketball coverage at thehoosier.com on three. And you should be a subscriber if you are wanting to keep up with all of the latest going on with Indiana football and basketball, breaking news, breaking stories. Joe has had the last couple of commitments to Indiana. He's broken those stories, and he's on top of all of the others as well, in addition to the local writers, Alec Lasley, who has also broken multiple stories there for thehoosier.com. So go support those guys, man. They got a great special with Buck for the first month, 50% off. That's you want to help the guys that help us. There you go. Subscribe to thehoosier.com. It's what, like $5 a month right now, man. You can't beat it. And the information is unbelievable. Every day, there are multiple new things coming up, whether it's the new offer to Marcus Ponder, Indiana's biggest basketball recruiting storylines to follow in July. That just went up. D'Angelo Pons tabbed as a first-round draft pick by ESPN. I mentioned that earlier, and I mentioned that I had talked about we'll bring that up. Actually, Jason says that Indiana football has to retire number 44, which is George Taliaferro's number. Well, they're not retired. Well, at least they, I don't know if they still do that, I guess, but do they still have that? I guess maybe not since Tom Allen left. They were having the a player wear that number each year, which was great. But if you're not going to do that, then I agree, retire the number. But Indiana does not retire numbers. I don't think that there is a single number in any sport retired. They have just a separate Hall of Fame. You're either in the Hall of Fame now. Should they make an exception there? Maybe that's would be a great debate. And Gritty asking, does On3 have a free message board? She had a friend ask and doesn't go on message boards. No, message boards are for the subscribers, because all the information that is being provided is mostly inside information. So, no, there are no free boards. It's just the members of the subscribers there. But those free boards, where people, fans, get in, and the discussions they get into are pretty damn amazing. I mean, they will go back and forth, whether it's basketball or football. That's another thing. If you want to interact with fans from all over at your convenience, those boards are the way to go. Thank you, Gritty, for the question. Appreciate you. But no, the boards are. And that's another thing. That's where you get information provided from guys like Joe Tipton and Steve Wiltfong from football, et cetera, and Alec Lasley, that it just goes in to the boards. So that's some of that stuff doesn't even go out on to the main stories. But Justin said he'd retire number 11 in basketball for Isaiah and Yogi. Well, you mean you're not going to retire from my man Dan Dockage? Just kidding. But that's why they cannot retire numbers in basketball, especially. Too many greats have worn the same number, and there's only so many numbers in basketball. You used to not have a number higher than five. I can't remember if that's still the case or not. And the reason for that was calling out fouls. You know, when the official would just go 5-5 or 5-1, it's not, you don't want to do 7-4. I beat you to it, Gritty. Speaking of which, I'll be on with Dan today at 2:30. So if you're in the Indianapolis area, you can catch me again with our man Dan Dockage. Looking forward to that. Brian says, see, there you go. That's exactly. How can you retire 11 and not 40? That's the whole deal. There's too many guys. There's guys that you don't even know about that have worn numbers that were great. So, what number was Bobby Slick Leonard? What number were the Van Arsdales? You go back and there are so many, there are just so many numbers, those single digit numbers. Just been worn by so many different guys. 32, 33. It would go on and on. But Indiana football has had a breakthrough season 2024, and we expect that success to continue. But part of that is because of having people back, like defensive back D'Angelo Pons, coming off of a sophomore campaign in which he earned a second team All-American by numerous outlets, finished the season rated the top quarterback in the Big Ten, number 9 among all Power 4 programs per Pro Football Focus. That's a lot. That's a lot of guys. Think about that. Every SEC team, every Big 12 team, every ACC team, every Big Ten team, all of those. That, if you're in the top 9, man, that's the elite of the elite. Pons had 55 tackles with 9 pass breakups, 4.5 tackles for loss, and 3 picks. On Monday, Pons was tabbed as a first-round draft selection in the 2026 NFL draft. ESPN's Matt Miller released the first round of his mock draft and placed Pons at number 28, going to the Baltimore Ravens, known for a staunch defense. Boy, would that be a great place to end up with solid coaching. He was the 4th cornerback taken in Miller's draft. The Ravens added 2 short-term cornerback options in veteran Jair Alexander and Chidobe Awuzie. But they need a long-term solution, Miller wrote. Pons projects as a slot corner because of his 5'9", 170-pound frame, but he's a feisty cover man with ball skills, 5 career picks, and the quickness to match up with inside receivers. I am so looking forward to covering football this year, partly because I expect the same level of success, and partly because the schedule is ratcheted up, and it ratchets up early. We're going to know fast. Last year, I called the 6-8-0 starts. Boy, I'm going to wait till the beginning of the season to give you my first 6-game outlook, and I can't wait. But, quite a difference in schedules last year, each game. And I think that was from even the non-conference games. Each game was just one little bit tougher. Each game had just one little bit better opponent as the entire season went along. And I mean, for the entire season, it was laid out in a way that Indiana never gets luck with the schedule, which was the perfect storm for Indiana for last year to get everything that they needed to do off the ground. And it was important. Now, this is going to be different. As you know, we've talked about the first 3 games are non-con games. So you wipe those. There's no doubt that's going to be a 3-0 start. But the 3 games after that, top 25 Illinois, potential top 25 Iowa on the road, and top 25 Oregon, probably top 10 on the road. That's your first 3 games after the non-con. The non-con, it's like a couple of different seasons in one. Those first 3 games, they're just warm-ups. They're get-readies. They're get everything down. Get the offense smoother. Go through all of that. Man, you get to Illinois, even that's a home game. That's going to be a fun game. I would imagine that I can't imagine that game's not on national television. Right now, I think it is scheduled for either noon, 3:30, or 4, which means it could be on Fox's Big Noon Kickoff. If it's at 3:30, that means it's on CBS. And then 4 o'clock, I think, would make it just a regular Big Ten game. Can't see that. I'm going with either noon or 3:30. And since it's early in the season, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know the schedule for the other games on that day. Obviously, I'm not looking at those. But if there's not something that's more tantalizing than that, because both of those teams are going to be ranked, I would be a little surprised if Fox did not jump on that for Fox's Big Noon Kickoff, which I've got to be honest with you, not a fan. I'm not a fan of noon kickoffs. It's great because your day, you will actually have a day after that, because the game, for me, that game will get over by 3:45, 4, she had posted 5, 6. That's a game I'll be home by 7 o'clock, which is great, because if that was a 3:30 game, then you just add 3.5 hours to that. So now you're looking at 10:30, then it just keeps getting later and later. But, and I know the fans, they want to tailgate now. Shoot, they've got a football team and they want to tailgate. Brian pointing out that IU versus Old Dominion is a 2:30 start on Fox Sports 1. Yeah, that's the first game. That's on August 3-0. Think about how close that actually is. Today's July 1st, people. August is next month. Not that you don't know that. Big Ten Football Media Days, 3 weeks away. Indiana basketball in Puerto Rico. Barely six weeks away. It's here. I mean, not really, but you might as well. Jason says, we have tailgate for 30 plus years. I'm not saying if you have been tailgating. Well, not really. That's not what you call tailgating if you've been to many of the other places. Indiana's tailgate was very pedestrian. Very pedestrian. The best thing for Indiana fans to do would be to go to some other games, other places, other locations. See how big it is. Even Michigan State, you'd be shocked at the size of their tailgating that goes on. They've had success for a long time. Just because you don't have success at the very moment. And of course, we all know the Southeastern Conference. Places like Ole Miss, where my daughter gets to enjoy one more season of The Grove this year. Oh, and you've got a mascot coming. Don't forget about that. Are you ready for the mascot? Indiana's the Bison. Hoosier the Bison. Is that a dumb name, since the team is already the Hoosiers? Just curious on the thoughts on that. But I love it. Will Indiana be able to explain it enough on why? Or I think the questions are just always going to be there because there's too many fans that are pedestrian. They're not constant. So Brian, not a fan of Hoosier the name. Jason says, Bison Mafia, let's get it rolling. Yeah, that's not bad. I like that. Brian says, surely with all the great minds at IU, they could have come up with something better than that. Well, I will say that they certainly didn't stretch themselves in the creativity department on that name. But what would you name him? What do you name a bison? You can't really name it after a person. That would probably not be respectful, I guess. So, I'm not sure what else you would name it, though. Hoosier is not. It's. I think it's not a great name for it to be a name, as opposed to what your school is. You know, the Indiana Hoosiers. Maybe it works out from the name standpoint. I don't know. The kids will love it. I think it's, like I said, I think it's a cool deal. I know that they're doing a suit now. The thing is, the funny thing, a lot of this stuff they're doing, Hoosier Hanks, when they used to do that, they had the mascot first. And as a matter of fact, his pants were candy stripe pants until they were forced to change those by IU, which that would be a must for him. Rocky the Bison. Well, Gritty says Rocky the Bison for the Rock and Limestone Quarries. Hey, that's not bad. But Rock, yeah, Rock. It's good. I like that. The Rock. Or just Rock the Bison. What do you think? Because of the Rock. But Rocky maybe, yeah. See, then you've got more explanation to do. Even to IU fans. What's Rocky? What Rock? Oh. I mean, you'd have to be a very, very casual fan not to know that if for Indiana. Can't call him Limey. No, that's true. Limey the Bison. No, that doesn't work out. Justin says he heard he will ramp up a line of cars that are on fire and jump it with a motorcycle. Really? Russell said everyone is calling DeVries D-Rock. Yeah, why that? Jason liked one of them, but he's not saying which one. Not saying which one. Baxter the Bison. Well, okay, but what's the... You got to give a what's Baxter? It flows, but what the hell does Baxter? Where's the connection? He says no one's gonna reply to his UVA cancel question. I didn't see it. Already tried of Purdue fans. We've got to take a break. The great Joe Tipton from On3 joins us next. Looking forward to it. We're back with plenty more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along, and even more happy to have Joe Tipton from On3, On3's national basketball recruiting guru. Just throw that on there. Joe, how are you, brother?
I'm good, Jim. Appreciate you having me.
Man, it's always our pleasure, and congratulations again. Another breaking story with Indiana's latest commitment is they, I'm pretty impressed, I've got to say, with although the team that Darian DeVries put together, it didn't, send off parades and confetti for everybody. We still don't know how they're really going to be. They may just be fine, but They had a lot going on, putting the team together, putting a staff together, which he put together a hell of a staff. And it's already paying quick dividends for 2026. They've already gotten one commitment, like I said, and their Latrell Allman is someone else that is very highly on Indiana. But Indiana getting that first commitment that you broke as well, that's big to happen this early, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great start. It's a great way to start off the class with a punch with a four-star guard and Prince Alexander Moody. Kenny Johnson led the charge, IU assistant, previously at Georgetown. That's where he started recruiting Prince. Great name, by the way. Great kid. Gave some banger quotes. If you haven't read the story, go check it out. But, yeah, I think it's a great start. I think Indiana is actually going to put together a pretty sizable class via high school. Actually, a lot of teams have kind of pivoted more to the transfer portal. Obviously they had to this year, inheriting the job and having to spin a roster together quickly. But I think moving forward, they want to take maybe four high school guys this class, which when I talk to other programs, they're thinking maybe two. high school guys, but they're wanting to put together a big class, a bigger class, and kind of build the culture and develop those guys from within the program.
Yeah, I've talked about that a lot this week on the balance of high school recruiting, because Indiana seems to be doing so well with some of these guys early on. I'm like, you know, hold up. You don't want a ton of guys. You don't want to get into the situation that Matt Painter was in a year ago when he originally had six guys coming in. And I looked at his roster and he had a couple sophomores. I'm like, over half of his team are underclassmen. That's not what you want, especially because that's a lot of replacing you're going to have to do. I think three or four is the absolute tops as to what you would want to bring in. And, of course, that also matters on what this talent is. If we're talking, you know, one or two elite five-star guys, well, that makes a difference because they may not be around more than a year. But there's going to have to be a mixture. You don't know what you're going to need next year yet because you don't know who the hell's going to stay, who's going to go, all of that good stuff. But the fact that they are having this early success in the 2026 recruiting and beyond is a great sign for Indiana fans.
No, I definitely agree. And I think a lot of their strategy, you know, with going to the high school, you know, high school ranks to recruit, you know, like I said, maybe four guys, is they wanted to recruit a lot of these high school guys for depth, right? They might go after these top 25, these five-star level players. Those will obviously be your starters, your impact players. But a guy like Prince Alexander Moody probably may not play a whole lot his freshman year. They want to bet on him as a sophomore, and hopefully, you know, obviously the key is to retain. But a lot of the high school guys that I think they'll recruit, I think they'll go after like one stud, maybe one or two studs. But then maybe that third or fourth high school player is kind of your eighth or ninth or even your 10th guy.
And yeah. And so we've seen also a definite determination on the style of team that Darren DeVries is building, not too far off of what he has right now. Although I just saw that Indiana had sent out an offer to a very large man, a 7-footer. So that kind of puts to bed any thought that he's not going to be using a big guy. I still don't know with what the type of offense I expect him to run. This guy can, I'm drawing a blank right now on his name, and I'll have to go back and find that. But
Marcus Ponder, talking about the big.
Yes, Marcus Ponder. He kind of reminds me. I haven't seen him play, but is he similar with his size like Umar Ballo?
I think he might be even a little bit of a better athlete than Umar Ballo, but yeah, definitely similarities in terms of just overwhelming size and strength, just kind of your traditional five man that is just a bruising force in the interior. If any Indiana fans get a moment, YouTube his name or search him up on social media. He is a beast.
Yeah, you can go into the Hoosier.com right now, and there are highlights of Marcus Ponder in there. 7 foot, 315 pounds. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of watching Blue Chips when Shaquille O'Neal was supposed to be this young. He was just destroying people.
No, 100%. I think he's even drawn some comparisons to Shaq, just similar size, similar stature. Really talented player, that's for sure.
Indiana, and like I said, in with a lot of guys. Latrell Almond, another one that we've heard a lot about, and they are seemingly in doing pretty well in that recruitment as well. If let's say they were to get, I don't know when he's expected to announce, but is there such thing as too soon getting your guys to commit too soon?
I think if you're getting a rising senior, that's not too soon. You know, if you're committing as an early junior, there are concerns about whether or not that will stick. You know, some players have seen their commitment stick I think in this case with a guy like Prince Alexander Moody, who's heading into his senior year or even the summer of before his senior year already committed, I don't think there's any problem with that. Latrell Almond obviously visited Indiana, went very well, raving reviews from that trip, and sounds like the Hoosiers are in a very good spot. I think he's going to take a couple more visits. I think he played really well recently at the NBPA Top 100 camp made more threes than anybody there, and that's when he started picking up a few more offers. I think a lot of schools were kind of on the cooler side with him. Indiana had, since they immediately got the job, had always been very, very serious in their pursuit of him. So I think that's what kind of gives them a leg up. But I think, you know, even if Luttrell were to commit either this month or even next month, I wouldn't say that's too early. I think in this day and age where a lot of what these teams are doing is so portal-focused or even international-focused for teams just to bring in experience and older guys, these high school guys, if you're not a five-star recruit, you have less leverage than ever. So I think it's wise, if you find where you want to go, don't drag it out. Don't risk losing your scholarship spot on a team that you really like.
Before I ask this question from Andy, the staff that Darren DeVries has assembled, Kenny Johnson from the East Coast, Rod Clark from Tennessee, of course, Drew Adams, originally from the Bloomington area, Mid-South, with his dad's great connections to grassroots basketball, Nick Norton. But he has put together an incredible staff that all have their own nice little niche of recruiting, and Indiana has not had that for quite some time. They did not have it under Archie Miller at all. They absolutely did not have it under Mike Woodson, who retained all Archie's assistants, which was crazy. But these guys, he has brought in a it's kind of reminds me of Kurt Cignetti. He's got the guys that he trusts, and these are all good guys as far as what they do.
No, he's got some killers. He has one of the more feared coaching staffs, I would say. It's interesting. I was in Memphis for EYBL. It was the first live period of the spring. And I don't think Indiana, I think they arrived the second day. DeVries was there. I think Kenny was there. I had one other assistant. I can't remember which one also. It was Adams. He came as well. And, you know, they show up to a game. I think they were watching Team Takeover, which has Jordan Smith Jr., which is a target of Indiana. And you could tell it was interesting because they weren't there a few minutes before it started. But right before the game tipped off, they arrived. They sat down front row, and all the other coaches that were already there, you could tell they're kind of their mood or their energy shifted because they're identifying, you know, Indiana comes in and it's like, okay, now these kids are going to have to take a look at the Hoosiers. You could feel the energy sort of shift. So it was interesting to see, that's for sure.
Well, and when they get some success on the court, that's when that will really start to matter again, because that used to be the thing. Recently, Indiana had the team camps, tons of high school teams from around the region. One of those players was Jason Gardner Jr., and for every one of his games, Darren DeVries was just leaning up against the basketball, you know, standard, the foam right there, making sure that he was seen on every play by Jason Gardner Jr. On that end of the court.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. Once they get this thing rolling, and I think, you know, DeVries, is it going to be a fantastic coach for Indiana? Obviously, a two-time MVC Coach of the Year at Drake before going to West Virginia for a year. They should have made the NCAA tournament in his first season at West Virginia, which is already an impressive feat. I think a lot of people had West Virginia being in, and obviously he comes to Indiana with a lot of resources and a lot of success. And coaches from around the country speak very highly of DeVries, and he is going to work his tail off, especially on the recruiting trail, and, you know, helping develop this team and make it an NCAA tournament team, hopefully in year one.
And Luttrell Almond, I mentioned him earlier, and you mentioned that the visit went well, which don't they? They usually always do. You don't hear too many visits that go badly, but Indiana is doing what they have to do without having that winning behind them right now. So this is also a little impressive that this staff is either landing these guys or in deep with these guys, because they don't have anything to show them really.
Yeah, I think what they are showing them is, you know, more than likely stuff that they did at West Virginia, or players that either DeVries has had in the past or the assistants like Adams, Rod Clark, or Kenny, because all of them have coached really high level players, some of them even NBA players, at their previous stops in their previous schools. So I think that's part of it. But then also, so I think it's the success that DeVries had at West Virginia, specifically kind of showing him how they utilized his players there, possibly even Drake. And then just the overall brand of Indiana, I still think is very attractive. You know, players are still drawn to the program, recruits specifically.
Well, we've seen that. And so it's going to be fun to see how it does translate once they start to have some success. And speaking of the Big Ten, man, I don't have a great – well, before I get that, I almost skipped this question. Andy wants to know your thoughts on Latrell Allman, Jordan Smith, and Talon Kenny.
Got it. So Latrell Allman, I think, is a modern – four-man hybrid, can shoot the three really well. Like we've kind of mentioned, I think Indiana is in a good spot with him. I think that they're probably the leader right now in his recruitment. Tay Kenny, Indiana's fresh on. He just signed an NIL deal with Adidas. So he's Adidas programs are starting to be involved. I think Louisville is the current front runner. He's from Newport, Kentucky, but the Hoosiers are going to toss their hat in the mix, see if they can make something shake. And I'm sorry, who was the last player he asked about?
Where did I go? Talon Kenny or Jordan Smith?
Jordan Smith. Yeah, Jordan Smith. So also obviously them taking over the job just a couple months ago, right? But Jordan Smith Jr. had a great relationship, or still does, has a great relationship with Kenny Johnson, the Indiana assistant who was previously at Georgetown. Jordan Smith Jr. is from the DMV area. He was heavily considering Georgetown, still is, but that relationship is now carried over to IU. I think Jordan Smith Jr. is a guy that's going to wait till late to make a decision. We're thinking, you know, end of the winter, possibly, you know, around, there's not an exact time frame, but could be early next spring before he makes a decision. So Indiana's playing the long game with him, but he is a terrific player, just kind of a high energy, can score at will, gets downhill, gets his teammates involved, more athletic than you think, strong. He's a guy that will make a significant impact as a freshman at the college level.
Looking forward to that. Anybody else that Indiana is quietly in on right now?
Yeah, I would say one guy that they're kind of quietly in on that's not getting a whole lot of people talking about him would be Ethan Taylor. He is a fast rising 7-foot center in this 2026 class. I believe at On3 we've got him ranked within that top 25 nationally. Yeah, we actually have him the number one ranked center in the class. He's from Kansas originally, so I believe that would be Rod Clark, the Hoosiers assistant, kind of heading that one up with his ties there to the area, and Mocan Elite, his AAU program. So he's a big time player. I think it's still pretty early in his recruitment. I don't think he's taken any official visits. I would anticipate Indiana getting one, but I think Kansas is currently out front of that one.
Yeah, and so it's going to be fun to watch who they bring in, how they bring in, how this team has continued to be built. And it's going to be fun to see what they're able to do this winter, because Michigan in the Big Ten, Purdue in the Big Ten, I've got a pretty good idea of them, of what they're going to be like. Obviously, both of those are probably the two favorites. I've actually said I like Michigan, to be honest with you, over Purdue. We'll see. But I don't know what Illinois is going to be like. I know they've got the entire Eastern Bloc on their roster now with at least five European players. And UCLA, of course, McCronin is going to come back strong. Michigan State, I haven't heard much at all about them. This has been the most quiet offseason for Michigan State that I can recall. You had Xavier Booker, the Indiana kid, go to UCLA. But what are you expecting from the Big Ten right now?
I think at the very top, kind of, you mentioned, you know, Purdue, Michigan, those schools I think are kind of out front. I think Washington, surprisingly, will be a whole lot better this season. They had an incredible portal class. They brought in a ton of new talent. I think they finished towards the bottom, if not dead last in the Big Ten this year. So I think they're going to move up considerably. I like UCLA. I think Oregon is going to be underrated. A lot of people don't talk about those West Coast teams. I think Izzo and Michigan State, like even myself, sometimes you kind of count them out and you're like, oh, they're not very talented. Like we'll just kind of have to wait and see, but they're almost always really, really good. Obviously they didn't expect to lose Jace Richardson to the first round of the NBA draft. They thought he was going to be a multi-year guy. But I think that they're bringing in the right players. They just had a key injury, so that's going to hurt them a little bit. But I think they might try to fill out this roster going international. So I think they're going to be good. I think Maryland might be surprising as well.
Really? And then that would be a surprise after all they lost.
Yeah. Well, I think when Buzz Williams obviously got the job from Texas A&M, he brought a lot of his players over. He brought, I think, at least three or four guys over from Texas A&M, and they were all some of his better players. And then they also went out into the portal and got some high-level players. Also got a former UConn signee, a McDonald's All-American, to suit up for him as a freshman next year as well. So I think ideally this Indiana team is probably, kind of just middle of the pack in year one, which is not a bad thing by any means. I know the expectations are incredibly high, but when you take over a job, it is more difficult than you might think to build a roster in basically 30 days. So I think year two is when they expect to take that jump into the top tier of the Big Ten. But I think a middle of the pack Big Ten, upper middle of the pack, is kind of what's to be expected.
Yeah, I think people forget. You just mentioned how difficult it is to actually build a team. Well, he actually had to build an entire team and an entire staff. If you go backwards, like I mentioned earlier, Mike Woodson, he just kept Archie's guys. He didn't know bring anybody in other than his buddies that he put on the payroll as consultants. But that was not the case here. So they had to really create all of this. And to create what he has done, I'm pretty impressed by it. Like I said, I don't know how much success they'll have in this first year. They're going to be a little light at the five. I don't know if I think they compete in the upper level of the Big Ten, but the bottom level of that upper level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely makes sense. I think this team will have a ton of shooting. You're going to see a lot of threes, hopefully at a high percentage, but they definitely got some shooters on this roster. But agree, the center position is one of the more difficult spots to fill on a roster because there's not many 7-footer, 6-foot-10 humans walking around. There's not many that are actually talented, and then they also cost a pretty penny.
Well, and I think that because I asked, there was an event not back in the end of May, the last time we really got to speak directly to Darren DeVries. I just said, hey, because he talked about being a little undersized at the five. And I'm like, well, what stopped you from going out? Because I didn't want to say, you've got a bag full of cash, and we know Indiana has one of the biggest bankrolls, but I don't know, was it that they didn't want to spend that money, or they didn't feel that there was the bargain that they would get for that money? I don't know what that answer actually is. It may have been some smart, like, I'm not going to spend that kind of money. I don't think that we're getting the return. That could be the answer. Of course, we're not going to get that, but I am curious.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both. There wasn't a lot of really talented centers in this class, and some of them were going for $2-3 million this offseason. And obviously, you have to fill the roster in other ways. So you're having to allocate funds for other players. You got to get all these guys in and get them on contracts, right? So I think they'll be okay at the center spot. I think that they'll definitely try to identify, really high level center coming into next season though.
How much time a day are you on the phone with people or emailing and texting, just going back and forth, whether it's coaches, agents, players? all of that, because you have become the basketball guru, the insider, fortunately, thehoosier.com with On3, and because you are killing it for On3 with On3. But I know that that takes an unbelievable amount of time, just to setting up and establishing and developing and maintaining the relationships, much less the follow through of the calls, the texts, the emails, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. It's very kind. Yeah, I mean, it's easy when I'm able to do something that I love. I've done this for, I believe I started Tipton Edits. It's 10 years ago now, so I've kind of gotten used to it. Obviously, it's grown and developed, and I've had
to adjust. Did you ever imagine when you first started doing those? And I remember, and I'm not making light of it, because it was, you were kind of on the forefront of all of that as well. But Joe would make all the thumbnails you would see for these players that were awesome looking, with just all of this different graphics added to that. You know, he started doing that, and that's basically how you got started in this business, right?
It is. It all started with the
what a graphics. Smart guy using all those contacts, because they all wanted Joe Tipton's edits.
Yes, no, and I'm very fortunate for that, and I'm so glad that the players trusted me and, gave me a platform, and I did the same for them, just kind of as we both grew together. But it's been an awesome journey, and I'm loving every second of it.
Well, and it's been great just to see you continue to break those stories as you continue to do. And the Hoosier.com, I know with On3, it has been a great relationship. You guys do such a great job together with Alec Lasley and Kyler Staley and Jamie Shaw, who does a great job. Does a lot of the groundwork, man. He's out at the DMV now, isn't he?
Yes, he is always on the road, always traveling, always watching these players, scouting reports, rankings, intel, you name it, he does it. One of the hardest workers I know, does a fantastic job.
Absolutely. Joe Tipton from On3 and Joe Tipton Edits. Buddy, as always, it is a great pleasure. We appreciate you for taking the time. Looking forward to doing it again as we get closer and closer. Indiana, absolutely. We're in July now. They play in Puerto Rico in less than 6 weeks, less than 5 weeks.
I know, it's exciting. It feels like the season's sneaking up on us quickly here. It's like the season ends, right? It's portal, all hell breaks loose. You're just trying to keep your head on straight, and I'm sure the staff obviously felt the same with the turnover and the coaching change there and having to adapt quickly. But obviously, at least in my opinion, basketball season is the best time of year. I think it'll be a good test for them early on, just to and I think a lot of things will be learned, like, how good is your team? How do we want to play? How do we need to adjust, right? So I think, the biggest thing about it is just a learning experience, but then also just a team building experience as well, because a lot of these players have never played together, and it's a good opportunity to mesh and, learn all about one another.
Yeah, and we have heard many times how important that is. Joe Tipton from On3, appreciate you, my friend. Have a great day and a great rest of your week, brother.
Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Keep breaking the stories, man. Joe Tipton from On3. On3's basketball guru with the breaking stories and all of that and more. You can keep up with that at thehoosier.com. Just $1 for the first month, 50% off for the first year. I'm telling you, get yourself a subscription, support those guys, and you will have video. Videos on, Ryan says we need video. Well, there are videos. There's videos, breakdowns on thehoosier.com. Back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Appreciate you being with us as Indiana basketball has released their entire non-conference schedule, which I think is about 9 games. I'm trying to get that pulled up on the screen for you guys, but we'll see if I can get that done or not. But I can tell you who they open up November 5th with: Alabama A&M, Then it's Marquette, second game into the season, November 9. I mean, that is, that's tough game right there, right off the bat. Now, they will have already played those non-con games back in August. So they'll have all of September off. It's amazing that that's less than 5 weeks away. That is really, really difficult to believe, to be honest with you. I cannot basketball. You're going to see Indiana basketball play before you see Indiana football. Now, how crazy is that? That boggles the mind. You know, when I keep talking about that Big Ten football media days is 3 weeks away, thereabouts. Well, hell, IU basketball will be playing in 5 weeks. That is what's nuts. I think I can pull this up for those that are watching via the YouTube, as the kids say. That's not big enough, but yeah, unfortunately, I can read it. Alabama A&M, Marquette in Milwaukee, and Incarnate World, Lindwood, then K-State, Big 12 opponent, Bethune-Cookman. Then it gets real, and it gets real fast as Indiana takes on Louisville on December 6th, and that is in Indianapolis. 1 week later, they travel to Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky to take on Kentucky. Now, Louisville probably will be ranked higher between those two teams, but that's back-to-back ranked matchups. And both of those are going to be extraordinarily difficult because, A, Louisville is going to be a very, very good team. Even though it's in Indianapolis, that'll probably be split 50-50 from a fan standpoint. And then you go into the Lions' Den down in Rupp Arena. So, but then after that, Chicago State and Siena. So there you go. 3, 6, 9, 10, 11, 11 preseason games for Indiana. Then they'll get into conference play, which they'll mix the schedule like they always do. They'll throw a few conference games in first, which I've never understood why you couldn't run them all straight, but who knows? Justin said he knew that Marquette game would be in Chicago. Second game, that's one to steal. Well, yeah, that'll be at the United Center, I guess. So, Indiana getting some experience also in big-time arenas, playing at the United Center against a good Marquette team, playing it'll be Gainbridge Fieldhouse, against Louisville, and then in Rupp Arena against Kentucky. So a little bit more beefier of a preseason schedule than normal, but not a lot. Indiana has had the opportunities. They just haven't been able to do anything with them. So we'll see if they can do so this year. Man, it has always been a fun day. Mike DeCourcy, appreciate him as always. And Joe Tipton from On Three, as always, enjoy having him on and all the guys from On Three. Make sure you go to thehoosier.com, get yourself a subscription, help those guys out as they are bringing you the most breaking news and latest in Indiana football, basketball, news, recruiting, everything, and the inside news. Buck for the first month, 50% off for the first year. Just go to thehoosier.com. We're back tomorrow to do this again. Dylan Sin will join us. Kyle Nedrip. Not sure if Rick is with us tomorrow or not, so we'll may have to sneak Cabro in. But either way, it's been a blast. Appreciate you guys. Go out. Have yourselves a great day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.